Night Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
It is Thursday night, and if you can hear my voice, you are exactly where you need to be. I am your host, Rick Hale. This is Paranormal Underground Radio on ztalkradio.com. Welcome. Karen, unfortunately, will not be able to be joining us tonight. She has some car issues or been abducted by aliens or taken away by Bigfoot. I don't know. I'll have to ask her later. Maybe you can message her on Facebook and find out what's really going on. But tonight we got a really great show lined up for everybody. For the first hour, we are going to be talking with Christopher St. Booth. If you don't know who he is, then I guess you've been living under a rock for the last 10 years because he is a producer, director, writes film scores, musician. I mean, this is a cat that has done everything. So we're going to be talking to him for a little while and for the first hour. And then the second hour, we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to be taking questions from the chat room. You can ask us here at Paranormal Underground a question if you got something that's burning inside of you. Wait a minute, that didn't come out right. If you have like a burning question that you would like inside of you, then you can go ahead and ask us, and we'll see if we can take care of you on that subject. Or, Cheryl, are we going to put the Skype ID out here in the chat room?
Yeah. We'd like to have callers, too, in the second hour. Yeah. If we can get our chatters to call in, we'll put that number in the chat room, and hopefully we can get some people to call in and talk to us about whatever they want to say about their paranormal experiences, or just maybe their favorite cryptid, or favorite UFO case, something fun like that.
Fantastic. I mean, you know what? I think that's going to be a lot of fun, but, you know, hopefully we get, you know, real phone calls and not somebody telling us how their ghost is eating all their ice cream in the middle of the night, because I think you might have a night eating problem there, pal. I actually had that once before during an investigation. There is a issue that is burning within me that I feel that, you know, not that I'm that important, which I'm really not, but I do feel that I need to address this. And we seem to have a major problem with drama of all kinds in the paranormal field. And usually I don't like getting involved, and usually I don't like being talking about it or anything of that nature. I have way too much time invested in this, and I like being a respected member of the paranormal community, so I want to keep it that way. However, there is a lot of drama. And recently, one of our listeners and contributors, Chris Davis, has been sending people a video with a television, with a telephone call of a 911 call made out of from Posttown Elementary School. And it's claiming that whoever this person is, and I think we kind of know who it is saying that there's underage drinking that's going on. Now, in the past, this individual has tried to rip down everything that everybody has worked for at Posttown. And like I told Jenny and Chris, they have a lot more credibility with me than the magician has. I think that this kind of stuff needs to stop. Now, what is it that has brought this about? I remember back in the day when maybe there was a few dozen of us running around and we didn't know each other, but now we have the internet and things like Facebook or, you know, MySpace, if you want to dig that out of a hole. We have all this drama that gets passed around, and it's not healthy, not for us, not for the field. I think that we need to remember that this is a field of inquiry that has been around, organized for over 100 years. And you can actually kind of trace ghost busting, ghost hunting, whatever, back to the first century AD with the Roman poet of Lucian. He was well known to have traveled the countryside looking for ghosts with friends. So, you know, he's the original Zach Bagans, I suppose. But it needs to stop. And this is something that a lot of us have spent a lot of years in, that we've built over the years. And we are doing research and investigation under the shadows of giants. So let's keep that in mind for the future, that this is not about you. It's not about me. It is about showing the world that, yes, there is life after death. And, you know, if you're listening tonight and you're the person that's causing this drama, dude, grow up, okay? That's all I can say. Stop being so childish. Just grow up, man, because there's a lot of us that take this seriously. whether you came into this field 40 years ago or you came into this field 4 years ago. Many of us take it seriously, and it's got to stop. So I am done with my rant and my rage there for the evening. I hope that I haven't offended anybody, and if I have, well, that probably means that you have a problem with drama. So anyways, so what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to Christopher St. Booth, and we're going to be talking his documentaries, possibly his music, and anything else that may tickle the gentleman's fancy. So hey, everybody, stick around. This is Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. It's going to be live.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Hi, everyone. It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Thank you. station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency.
On ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio at ztalkradio.com. I am your host, Rick. Like I said before, Karen cannot be joining us tonight. However, joining us is our guest. We have film producer, director, composer, Christopher St. Booth. And just let me ask you something, Chris. Is there anything you haven't or don't do?
I've been answered that question.
I mean, you've done it all.
Yeah. It depends how many drinks I have, I think.
See, I have that same problem, too, and when I wake up the next day, I'm like, what?
Exactly. We've been in the entertainment business forever, so I think we just moved from creation is creation, so whether it's art or music or film, or even clothing design, which I had actually done for a long time. So, you know, I think whatever, anything to do with art always stood out for us, so we kind of got involved in all the avenues of that.
Yeah, it's definitely your films are very creative. But before we get to your films and before we get to your music and you know everything that it is that you do, I want to know a little bit about Christopher St. Booth. Now, I mean, obviously you're not from the United States; you're from Great Britain, correct?
Originally, yes.
Okay, so basically, you come from a country where there's three ghosts for every one person. What exactly is it that sparked your interest in this, rather rarefied field of inquiry?
I think that we've always been involved in the dark side. I mean, even when we were writing music, we were writing, dark type music, whether it was Nine Inch Nails type stuff or David Bowie, or more of the rebellious. I guess the word rebellious actually comes to mind. Back in the 70s, it was more rebellious, and we were always involved in being different. I mean, we always were treated different.
Sure.
We were picked on and we were bullied and everything when we were in school because we were musicians and we were, you know, somewhat in that kind of thing. But when we got into the film business, even when we had worked for Playboy for a while, and even when we were working for Playboy, the stuff that we were doing was very artsy and very dark. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter what we did, it was always very, very high-end, very passionate, very dark. And then eventually when we did get into doing horror movies, we got involved in places that were really haunted when we were filming them, and so we just started basically filming documentaries of us being in places, filming horror movies, and of course sci-fi liked that idea, and they asked us to do shows for them. Of course, we actually did experience paranormal activity ourselves, so that kind of, at that point, I mean, I think also we're very much into the underdog, we're also very much into spirituality. Mm-hmm. And the moral, immortal, and mortal worlds. So I think it was just a natural progression that happened, that it was very fascinating and also very, you know, I mean, when you go out there and you investigate and for a client or for, you know, whatever mm-hmm. situation is, you're really looking for a lost soul. And there's a lot of compassion that needs to be filled in that area. And I think because we always had written stories for the underdog, right. Whether it's, you know, human drama or non-human drama, we just found it very fascinating and needed to be done the correct way.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, I read a lot of your Facebook posts and I really appreciate them. It seems that you are an incredibly spiritual person, and you know I like that. I'm very spiritual as well, not religious but spiritual. Do you think that there is a lot of room still in the paranormal field for spirituality? It just seems that a lot of like anything that has to do with psychics or, you know, basically anything spiritual in general sort of has been kicked out in the last 8 or 9 years or so. What are your thoughts on spirituality?
Well, first of all, I don't think anything on television is spiritual in any way.
Yeah.
The paranormal shows, they are completely marketing tools to have you watch the shows. So that's why they're fast-paced. And a lot of, you know, stuff happens very quickly. because they need to. I don't think there's a lot of depth or passion in TV in general. That's why I've always been a movie maker, not necessarily. There's been some great, don't get me wrong, there's been some great television shows like The Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, True Blood, all that, but, you know, that has always still been approached more independently.
Right.
When Miami Vice first started happening, they were the first ones to actually turn the music louder than the dialogue because they wanted a more filmic approach. And I think that with all that, you know, said, that comes from a deeper sense of self, where art starts. And then I don't know how you could be involved in the paranormal business without being spiritual, because after all, we're basically trying to help spirits live in a spiritual world. So if you have not spirituality, I don't know even how you could even attempt to communicate.
Well, I think that's the thing that's always that's the thing that I don't like about the television shows. Don't get me wrong, I love all the gadgets and stuff. You know, I'm a dude, so of course I'm gonna like things that go beep beep beep, lights up and takes batteries and all kinds of stuff. But the main thing that really concerns me with some of these television shows, and I know that you've taken a very strong stance on this as well, is the whole provoking thing. I just think that is, I know that if I'm sitting in my house drinking a beer, watching a Cubs game, I don't want a group of people with backwards baseball caps and mesh shirts on running into my house telling me that I have to leave. Let me just ask you this. Do you think that provoking has actually taken away from this as a respectable field of inquiry?
I think provoking really just came in, mostly from the entertainment side, and because they were not getting the drama, whether it's in television or even in real life, the next stage would go ahead and kick in. I think that if you're truly a spiritual person, provoking is not, even the word debunking actually is a demeaning word, because actually
yes.
Humility involved in the word ha ha, laugh laugh, you got something that's not true is actually a negative conversation in general. I think that if you go in there with a really beautiful soul, which you have to earn, you can't just get it, you have to earn it, and you have to have the, basically like the Thor's hammer, you know, you watch the Avengers or the Thor, the chap can't pick his hammer up unless he's worthy. Same
right.
type concept in anything in life. You get your spirituality, and you get what you deserve out of life by what you put out of life. And I'm, you know, obviously, I heard a little bit of your show before I came on, where you're talking about the drama, and it's just the same thing. It's just a lot of people demanding attention, and it's taken completely away from what it's all supposed to be about. We're supposed to be there to help the souls move on. It's got nothing to do with you or me. It's got to do with the spirits that are lost.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny because, you know, I'm just about 30 miles north of Chicago, and Chicagoans, we love our ghosts. I mean, we really do. We're a city that's built on bullets, booze, and babes. You know what I'm saying? And when Ghost Adventures came to town and they did the investigation at the Excalibur nightclub, which I used to frequent when I was in my early 20s, and I've heard stories about the place for years, and I couldn't help but cringe just a little bit, because it's like, there's no demonic entities there. There's nothing that's being harmful to people. You have the ghost of a little girl and a poor woman who is a lost soul. And I actually sent Nick Roth a message. I'm like, please, there's no demons. Just be respectful. And I'm going to tell you what, they were very respectful on that episode, and I really appreciated that.
There are more demonic entities on Facebook than there are in the houses that we're investigating.
No, I know. I mean, I've had some bad experiences with spirits. I've been pushed, and I actually got punched in the head one time, hard enough that it left a mark. And I kind of sort of deserved it, because I did call the spirit a pedophile. The spirit in the house was a pedophile, but apparently he didn't like that term very much. So it wasn't provoking, but I still got my butt handed to me anyways. So in a way, I guess I deserved it.
Actually a past ghost, you have to understand, is when you communicate with, you're trying to communicate with spirits, a lot of people are using modern-day terms and modern-day language that they really don't understand anyway. So basically, they're only going to go after your tone of voice or your soul. They can feel the energy, whether you're, it's kind of like the devil-God thing, like, you know, God knows you're good, the devil knows you're good, so it's basically his concept to, you know, disrupt your whole life. And,
sure.
And basically they know what you're there for, whether you're just going to play a game or you're going to really there and try to help. So obviously the bad energy is going to want to put up a little bit of static. And right. That's what you just need to know. You just really need to be in touch with your own soul before you go in there and try to help somebody else.
I agree. I mean, in my own spirituality, I'm a Buddhist. Whenever I go on an investigation, I do some really heavy meditation, say my mala numerous times, you know, cover myself with the Buddha mind, at least try to, because I've seen people go into investigations and it's like they come out scratched or they come out harmed in some way, or what's even worse than that is they wind up bringing something home with them. That's not something you want to do.
No, I mean, it's really very similar to Facebook. You don't really know who you're dealing with on mm-hmm. Facebook as much as you don't know who you're dealing with in the spiritual world, because there's no guarantee that you're talking to the person you hope to be talking to. You're hoping through, you know, research and clues and possible things that you're talking to the person that you're trying to communicate with, but there's no guarantee. So you have to be very spiritually in tune. I mean, we have a Facebook page called Paranormal Teachings that I put up to help
people. I love that.
Understand, because it all came about when people were being mocked, and they were being mocked because they wanted just to run and buy a K-meter and, you know, go do their thing. And the thing is that it wasn't their fault, because they're watching TV and everybody's ghost hunting, then place commercial here, and the next minute they're using one of these cool gadgets. But nobody ever really took the time to teach them, and the instructions are very, very vague on how to use this equipment.
Yeah.
So they want to get excited, and they drop, you know, whether it's, you know, under $100 or just over $100 in this equipment, they come in and want to use it. And it's really not right to make fun and demean because somebody doesn't know exactly how the piece of equipment works. We've got to, you know, learn from everybody and really put a good vibe across. So we put that up to help people understand, you know, what, you know, give everybody a voice, a very respectful voice, and nobody,
sure,
obviously, you know, dishes anybody. But the thing is I think it's pretty cool. You know, the equipment's pretty cool, but like anything, it's only one part of the puzzle, you know?
Yeah. Well, I know in my own investigations, I've been using what has become, you know, known as the Holzer method for probably over 20 years now. And, you know, ask anybody, they'll tell you that Rick has a mad man crush on Hans Holzer. But he was brilliant, and I read everything he's ever written. And I messed. And, excuse me?
He was, and it's like Barry Taft being one of them, you know, a parapsychologist from 1973. I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah.
You're talking to people that were, you know, I had a ghost hunter, the first ghost hunter, one of the first ghost hunter books that really was written was in 1873. Yeah. And it's actually called The Journal of a Ghost Hunter. And one of the cases they touched actually was one of the ones that we did that was Secret Wonder and the Possessed.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool to actually read this book and see what kind of methods they used to find out, you know, if the house was haunted or not. And I found that truly fascinating, without obviously jumping on the bandwagon of getting every kind of digital device that you have, or, you know, basically bringing in a room of many different psychics and mediums. I think you probably should never have more than two mediums or sensitives in the room, because I think you could counteract what you're trying to do, but I think that's very. We use sensitives and we use electronic equipment, and we also use our gut feeling. That's basically when we go in there to do that, and we just sit down there, and we get a lot of research about what we're trying to look for and what we're trying to obviously get out of what we're heading there for, and we put it all together, and we hope that we do it respectfully and come out hoping that they find the light that they're looking for.
Yeah. I mean, I know in my own investigations, I will not conduct an investigation without the impressions of a medium. And the medium that I've been working with for years, Nancy Laporta, she's, I want to put it to you like this way, if she could float, she would be Daniel Dunglass Hugh. That's how great she is. if she could float out windows and around rooms and stuff like that, yeah, then she would definitely be in that. But so we took a little bit of a segue there into your films, talking about The Possessed. Now, the first film of yours that I ever saw, of course, was Spooked, The Ghosts of Waverly Hills Sanatorium. Now, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you about something. I'm a little bit skeptical about Waverly Hills. Not that there's stuff going on there, but about people's intentions. It's what's really amazing about this is that to do a documentary on something like that is like a huge undertaking. Am I correct?
Yeah, but I mean, and obviously when you watch it, we try to include as much as history and dimensions and specifications that the whole building, including doing a 3D model of the place and going through the whole place. Mm-hmm. Waverly is, we have an office in Louisville, and we're like 1 mile from Waverly. So every time we drive to the store, we see the tower, and I have to tell you, it haunts me every time I drive by that tower, because I always remember when we pulled up there in 2004 to start the production of Death Tunnel, the...
Which was ominous. A fun movie, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, ominous feeling, what it was like to actually walk in. I mean, based out of Los Angeles for 25 years, and then you walk into that place. It's like finding the Titanic in the middle of the desert.
Sure.
It's so intense. And that's what Waverly does hold. The pretentious part that you're talking about, I think, is like any place that has to survive, and it bases itself off marketing. And unfortunately, you know, in order for them to stay open, they have to charge and they have to make a business out of it. But
sure. It's
up to you as a person. It's better that we go through that than not be able to go into it at all.
Correct. I couldn't agree more.
Before, you know, whether you're jumping, spending $45 or more, up to $100 on, you know, a ride at Universal Studios or Disneyland, it's no different than going to Waverly Sanatorium and dropping the same amount you could expect to go into a very spooky place that truly is haunted.
Sure.
Whether the every story you hear is true or not, well, you know, you take everything with a grain of salt. You know, and if you're really well crafted and you're very well versed in this concept of paranormal, and you've done your research and you've done your practicing and your boot camp and everything, you know exactly what is not real, and you go in there and you treat it genuinely. And I think at that point, there's nothing better than doing that. Waverly Hills truly was one of the most haunted places we've ever been.
Well, I can see that. I mean, you have that much death that goes on in. I mean, let's face it, it, you know, when you think about death as a whole, it's so vast that in that small space, yeah, of course you're going to leave stuff. Something is going to be left behind, either a psychic imprint that doesn't interact with people, or a true haunting, which, you know, as, you know, residual and intelligent, of course. With the true haunting or the intelligent, these are the kind of entities that are going to, that you're going to be dealing with specifically. My mom is originally from Louisville, Kentucky, and even when she was a kid, my mom's 60 years old, even when she was a child, they were told, don't go there, that place is bad.
Well, I mean, it had a stature. I mean, basically when we had interviewed Ron and a security guard, he used to drive down the Dixie Highway every day, and he saw it, because at that time the trees have grown really large now, so it's very hard to even see. In the summer you cannot see it at all because of the leaves on the trees, but in the winter you can just see the tops of the towers on the fifth floor. You can just barely see it now. Back then you could see the whole place, and it has an ominous feel of an asylum or a prison, or, you know, just basically a castle, a scary place that you did not want to be put into. And of course, with what happened, I mean, when you had tuberculosis back then, whether you admitted yourself into the place or not, they came, banged on your door and got you, because they needed to contain the disease.
Right.
So they actually arrested you and put you into that sanatorium. And that was basically, you know, you had to get better before you were allowed to, you know, come out. And a lot of, fortunately, they did not have a cure at the beginning of Waverly Sanatorium, so a lot of people didn't make it out. So the spirits that are there, I believe, there's a few, you know, there's more oppression than there is dark, if you know what I mean, because the dark came when the kids started doing satanic rituals and they broke in the building and started, you know, painting the divination symbols and obviously directing it the wrong way, and then there was a few murders there. A homeless man was murdered and cut up and thrown down the elevator, and his dog was murdered there, and all kinds of stuff. That is actually, you know, newspapers. I mean, that's really, that stuff really happened. It's not like legends. That stuff really did go down. The owner told us about all the murders that did go down there. But, I mean, that's where the dark energy came from. And besides that, there was a lot of, there was rape there, a lot of drugs that was going on with children that was, not children, but teenagers that were hanging out there. So there's all kind of energy that was hanging out in Waverly Hills Sanatorium. That built a scent like incense that would just remain there. So when you walked in there, especially being a sensitive, you're going to be picking up all kinds of emotions.
And
Sorry. Cool.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I've never been to any of these places, but I do, my wife and I, we do plan on going to Gettysburg probably next year or the year after. My my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather fought at Gettysburg. And, you know, you get these places that are like, they just absorb all of this energy. And it's really sad when you got people out there that are so self-seeking and so selfish that they go in there and they rile these spirits up. And I think that that's definitely what's happened with all the occult type activity that happens in places like Waverly, or there's a few places here in Chicago, Bachelor's Grove Cemetery, which is my favorite haunt. And you got a lot of that kind of stuff that goes there. Have you known anybody, or have you yourself tried to release some of these spirits into the you know, afterlife, their next incarnation,
well,
whatever you believe?
We're not investigators, and we're not, you know, what's the word would be, healers. But what we do is we're storytellers, and we'll go out and we'll document. And of course, being obviously artists, we get very, very personally touched with the story. So at that point, it gives us a passion to drive the story into a direction that we feel will help clear up the name or a forgotten person or somebody that, I mean, everybody needs to be remembered. That's the whole point. One of the reasons of hauntings is when you're not remembered or something happened that was not justified.
Sure.
In the world of energy, everything must be justified. I mean, very similar to, you know, when it needs to end the way it needs to end, and if it's taken too soon, especially when you don't know about it, you remain there. And that is what we're talking about with energy. That sort of energy is left there. So especially with sensitives, people walk in and they know there's something that's unfinished business. So I think through our stories, we try to finish that told story so that we feel that it helps move them on. When we can help tell the story of the person that did not have a name, we'll try to find their name. Or, you know, or somebody had passed away through a tragic murder or whatever it may be, we try to find out and clear that up. And so that we can feel like basically there's closure. It's all about closure.
Yeah. Well, I think it is, too. I've never really subscribed to the idea that, you know, a ghost haunts a place because they don't know that they're dead. How can you not? You're yelling in people's ears and they don't understand what you're saying and their clothes are changing over time. I definitely think that, I do believe, though, and especially as a Buddhist, that attachments can keep you here. And attachments can be unfinished business. So that's definitely a biggie. Now, you mentioned the Watsika Wonder. It's from my home state, of course, and it's one of the most amazing stories in the paranormal, especially in proving that reincarnation is a real thing. A lot of our listeners don't really know about the Watsika Wonder. Can you know, give us like a thumbnail sketch of what that history was about?
Well, the Watsika Wonder is probably one of the most fascinating. It's America's first documented possession.
Correct.
In 1877 in Waseca, Illinois, and it was basically happened at two houses. It was the Mary Roth house, which is still there, and the Lewis C. Venom house, which is still there, and they were across town from each other. And basically the Roth house housed an 18-year-old girl that was put into an asylum for basically catatonic, schizophrenic, basically a girl that was just very confused. okay? Right. And she was put to an asylum, probably under the grounds of as they always do, for the wrong reason. And she got very much into bloodletting, and she was very much into leeches. So she had bled herself dry and actually died on the floor of an asylum. Yeah. 12 years later, she possessed a 12-year-old girl that was in just down the road, whose name was Lucy Venom. And she, that 12-year-old girl became so much like her that she moved into the family of the dead daughter and became that dead daughter. And the family accepted her now as her daughter coming back to life. So that was a powerful story, because the family had lost their daughter, and now this little girl was suddenly knew everything about the daughter and talked like her, said that she was her, knew everything about her. There's no way she could know. They right. accepted her as a daughter and moved in and lived with her for 3 months. And it was such a powerful story that we had to tell it. And, of course, we filmed it in both of the real houses, and we actually did find some of the living relatives. They were about 82, and we actually talked to them. It was an incredible story, and it has some scary signs to it. And it is documented in a diary, a journal, that was done in 1877. A spiritualist guide, and actually the Dalai Lama called the case the first case of reincarnation. So it's just a fabulous story. It's very creepy, but it's also very enlightening.
Right, and you hear those kind of stories from countries that where reincarnation figures into their religious traditions. India, Japan, China, anywhere where there's a Hindu or a Buddhist influence, you're going to get stories of reincarnation. And you do hear these stories about the young boy who went to go live with another family, and he had a birthmark on his head, and they were able to prove that he was somebody in a former life who got shot in the head, and he's going to these people's homes. So I'm gonna definitely, for me, I'm gonna have to go with the Dalai Lama on that, or His Holiness, excuse me, and that I do believe that was a case of real reincarnation. How it is it that she was able to recall this past life, and that kind of energy is so strong.
It's a beautiful story, because
it really is.
It also involves unfinished business, because through our investigation and through the research and through what we got out of it, it was in our view that it was an unfinished story of the father had felt so bad he put his daughter into an asylum and she died there, and he basically didn't have time to tell her how much he loved and how sorry he was that he put her in asylum, because she died when they were out of town. At the same time, Lucy was going through the same thing that Mary Roth was going through, and during some of the evidence that we found through sensitive to electronic equipment as well as our research, we believe that the father did revisit in our investigation and help tell the closure of the story. She was basically hanging around, in our view, because when you read the newspaper articles, which they're very available, you can get archived newspaper articles of what happened. They called her a devil.
Yeah, and I've read that.
It really was not the concept whether she was the headlines read angel or devil.
Mm-hmm.
She was made fun of because basically like any witch concept, because she was, you know, had voices in her head, she was being called a witch. And we had helped believe that Mary Roth had come back to help Lucy get over the same thing she was going through and actually help find her way. Right. She was also in a lot of pain. Her body was failing her. So she came back. So basically, through all things, we felt that she was an angel, and we told her that in our investigation. Mm-hmm. And at that point, the closure seemed to had started. So we had felt very good about feeling that. As reincarnation is, I mean, I'd asked the clergy one time, do you believe an angel can possess somebody?
Yeah, I've oftentimes wondered that myself.
And they said no. And I said, oh, that's very fascinating. Angels cannot possess, they just are. Where the devil can possess, but the angels cannot. I found that very fascinating. I'm not sure in my view of that, except I really believe that good can possess as well as bad. So that was what the clergy told me.
Right.
The bad people.
I'm sorry, Christopher, I interrupted you.
No, the Vatican had actually told us that they did not believe angels possessed people.
Yeah.
But then they call it differently. I think the word possession is only used for the dark side, where maybe taking over one spirit, where an angel basically inspires, where a devil possesses.
Right. Well, I know here in Chicago back in the 70s, there was a case where the spirit of a murdered woman had taken over another woman. And while this woman was sleeping, she was able to tell her husband, who was a doctor, and they were able to go to the police with what the spirit of this woman was saying inside of her. And they actually arrested the guy on this. He murdered her. He tried to show like it was a rape, but it really wasn't a rape. But I can definitely say that there's definitely good things that can pop up and maybe even pop in and, you know, help you tell a story. And I definitely would have to agree with you on that. One of the other film that I'm really familiar with, and I know a lot of people are as well, is Children of the Grave. I know that when I do an investigations and there's a child spirit involved, to me that's very sad, because this is somebody who was cut down early on in their life. And that seems to be the message that you were trying to bring across in Children of the Grave. Would you agree with that?
Well, I mean, it's just tough. I mean, dealing with children in general, it breaks your heart. I mean, I just spent 10 lovely days with my Gabriel, my baby, who's 5 years old. Mm-hmm. And the tenderness that he shows you and the cuteness he shows you, and also, you know, even if he does something bad and you scold him, he cries and you feel bad about it. You know, you feel bad that you've got to get mad because, you know, after all, you're only human. And you feel bad about it. I mean, when you're dealing with children's spirits and the crying that goes on, you know, in the EVPs and basically in the other world, you can't really do much to comfort that. You do everything you can to make a very comfortable investigation when you go in there and be very, very compassionate about it. But it's very hard because you can't hold them. You can't, you know, you can't show them that sign of warmth. And Gabriel kept saying to me, "Dad, please hold me, hug me. I want to hug you. I want to hug you."
Yeah.
Imagine if that is happening on the other side and you can't do it.
Right.
It breaks your heart.
No, it really does, and it's sad. And I think that that's why it's so incredibly important to use mediums. I mean, obviously, I'm sure we can agree that that life does, you know, life does go after death. But in order to maintain that balance in the universe, you have to have people who are able to sense, see, and speak to those entities. And I think that that's why working with mediums is so important, because they are the ones that can directly speak to these entities and give them the comfort. And I've seen it over the last few years. It's like it's used to be so standard that paranormal investigators use mediums. Now it's like, well, we don't really trust them. How do you feel about that, being in like the, you know, the entertainment side of things?
I think, you know, there's I was going to say there's good car salesmen and bad car salesmen, but I don't think there's any good car salesmen. I'm not really sure anymore.
It's like saying lawyers, you know.
But when the mighty buck comes in, everybody's doing it for that. I think there is bad and good in everything. I think my version of a psychic and a sensitive and a medium is just somebody that is hyperly sensitive, more than the, you know, everybody's sensitive. Mm-hmm. Then there is highly sensitive people, and of course, and the spiritual mediums, the psychics come in. They're just basically more in tune with the afterworld. I mean, it's basically when a Buddhist makes that commitment, whatever commitment you make in life, whatever method you practice, you're going to become more in tune with. Whether you're a piano player and you play piano every day, you're going to become a better piano player. If you're focused on that, you become great. What we have to watch out is people that just know enough to be dangerous, meaning they just got into it for 5 minutes. Now they're calling themselves demonologists, or they're calling themselves this or that. Mm-hmm. I think that it's a cool thing to want to do that. I just think it's in an honest system. You really need to be very much in tune and very, very well practiced and seasoned before you can start putting a label or a title onto yourself of what you are. You can say this person is sensitive, and they can go there to help, but to actually say that, hey, I'm a professional sensitive, I'm psychic, I'm coming in here to do this and do this, without going through many, many, many pain and years of doing it, that might not be a good idea.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely a big part of the problem. Over 30 years worth of research and over 20 years worth of investigating, I can honestly say that I can probably count on one hand all the real, you know, the real psychics and mediums that I know and that I work with. And when I say count on one hand, I'm talking three.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of people that aren't even know that they have it, and they're walking around, and they're like, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when people go up scout for good baseball players, and suddenly they see somebody being able to throw really well, or catch really well, or bat really well. Those mm-hmm. are the kind of things, and there's people out there that are really in tune, that we've met in, you know, some of our events that we've been holding. I've met people that truly, truly just, they walk in and you can see it in their eyes. There's
yeah.
something very awake in them. You know, you can see their eye. I mean, Buddhists, basically when you practice Buddhism, you get really in touch with the spiritual world. Your eyes are very wide. They're very open. You're very awake.
Right.
And that's a big part of being involved in anything in the spiritual world. You must be open to it. You must have faith, and you must believe in it. So I think there's a lot of people out there that don't even know it or do know it, that I think everybody deserves a chance. I just think that nobody should be labeling themselves.
Yeah, we had Dave Considine on the show. I think it was like 2 years ago, two Halloweens ago. Really super nice guy. Really knows what the hell he's talking about. And but here's a guy that had went through literally decades worth of training, and where he can legitimately call himself a demonologist. Like you said, it's like you do a little bit of reading, you do a little bit of study, or if even that. And then you go out there and you call yourself a demonologist. First off, we don't know what we're dealing with. I'm sure that everybody can agree with that, at least I hope.
Well, the demonologist that we had dealt with, just that I was very impressed with, was the one in The Haunted Boy, The Secret mm-hmm. Crime of the Exorcist, because he actually was involved and worked for the Vatican as a demonologist, and he actually studied the Devil's Bible, one of them deciphered it. And I think I believe he's 82 now.
Mm-hmm.
An incredible, charming chap, very fascinating. When he taught, you listened. He just went on, and basically he started quoting right from the very first testament
yeah.
to everything he experienced, and then basically he's actually drawing paths from the very first testament to what's happening today with who the devil really is. There was not one moment you could not stop listening to what he was saying, because he truly was fascinating. He really knew the whole concept of what demonology really is. And that was fascinating to me.
Right. I mean, was that Gabriel, Father Gabriel Amorth?
No. His name is William Bradshaw. And basically, he's a historian, yeah. and basically he worked for the church for many years as a demonologist, and then after he retired, he wrote several books on the subject, and mm-hmm. he's just fascinating, right? We just basically start on the art of what a, you know, basically the very first testament, what happened with the whole concept when evil was basically entered into the world.
Right.
And then, of course, he does the parallels with what's going on in today's news.
Yeah,
and it makes so much sense when he talks, and I love that.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely true. There really is evil in the world. It all depends on your interpretation of it. Like with what recently happened over in Connecticut. Let's face it, that was evil. That was evil.
Well, that's what the church describes. The church describes what the meaning of devil is man, because they the first time they really understood what evil was, they watched what man had done, whether it was to the Native Americans in the first genocide, when they tried to get rid of the Native Americans, or when they basically in Germany and the Holocaust. How could anybody do something so evil and something so terrible without truly being in touch with a different realm, which is the ultimate hate, the ultimate terror, which is basically Satan? And that's how they basically base on what really, when the devil, does the devil exist? Yes, because how could a man ever do something so horrible like that?
Yeah. Well, I know that from what I've read, Adolf Hitler, for example, Adolf Hitler was very obsessed with the occult. Not in the satanic realm of the occult, but he was very obsessed with magic, alchemy. And I've actually heard it said that people say that he opened himself up to entities that may have caused him to go completely insane and do the things that he did.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you start getting involved into the darkness, you're starting opening doors. I mean, Bishop James Long, I don't know if you know him, he's a very...
I know of him.
He's a good friend of mine, but he's one of the most respected people that I know in the concept of the clergy as well as the paranormal situation. But he had taught me a lot of things, and basically, you just have to... For instance, like all these people going around, first of all, they're playing exorcisms. They're playing recordings of exorcisms and doing exorcisms, the real ones, of course, that is. They mm-hmm. they are denouncing names of demons. And we had included probably about 20 minutes of the real exorcism of Emily Rose, which is Annalise Michelle,
yeah.
in The Haunted Boy, because there was no recordings of the real exorcist at all. There was no recordings at all in any way. So we used some of that to kind of show you what the voices sounded like. Seven dogs howling from deep inside. Horrible, just incredible, just scary sounds that would no human being could ever make. And he said, but please do me a favor and do not play where she calls the demon's name, like, what is your name, demon? And there were yeah. too many people using the names of the demons, which I'm not going to get into.
Because no, definitely not.
If I would go ahead and say, hey, you know, call somebody, hey, Rick, you know, look, you're gonna look, because yeah. you're going to be calling your name. So you don't want to be calling a demon's name, because you're going to get their attention.
Right.
Basically, it's like anything, they love attention. Narcissists and the devil are so close in the whole concept. They want attention. So
yeah.
you must not give it any attention.
Right. Well, see, it's like I work in the mental health field. I've been working with young boys that have mood and behavioral disorders for almost 13 years now. And I love my job. It's great. But a lot of times when you see like these, you hear these possessions, it's like, well, they have incredible strength and, you know, they broke their bonds and they beat the hell out of a few people. Well, to me, that's a psychotic break with reality. When I used to weigh, 325 pounds. I had a 90-year-old, I had a 90-pound kid, thin as a rail, literally throw me against the wall because he was going through a serious psychotic break with reality. How do you differentiate between, say, a person that is severely mentally ill or somebody that does have a legitimate spiritual problem?
Well, that's a fine line, because dealing with our films, The Haunted Boy and The Possessed, we had talked to a lot of schizophrenics
yeah.
and also a lot of people that said they were possessed. And it was just very fascinating to hear, you know, why do you think you're possessed? I mean, first of all, you don't have superhuman strength, which is one of the signs of being possessed. You do not speak a complete different language, mm-hmm. like Aramaic, so to speak, Latin, whatever, you know, and you don't foretell the future. Those are three of the five main signs of being possessed. So they say, well, basically, they go ahead and tell you that I'm not feeling myself. I'm feeling really depressed. Somebody keeps telling me what to do. I mean, we interviewed a chap, and he gave me a note at a conference, and it says, I'm going to kill you.
Oh, nice.
And I decided to look at him and said, will you? I said, can I interview you? So I love that. And we took him back into the back room, and we sat up and we filmed him, and we found out he was a schizophrenic, and he had heard voices in his head, and he had mm-hmm. told him that he had to go shoot his neighbors, shoot his wife, and, you know, he's on medication now, but he told me his full story. But the thing is, it's a fine line, because it's like Annalise Michelle, for instance, the real Emily Rose, she was a devout Catholic, and she was one of those people that basically punished herself for other people's sins. She would
right.
whip herself. She was also epileptic and had some other things wrong with her, and they actually withheld her medicine. associate basically delusional when you become epileptic. The people who were epileptic back in the day were actually put to death as being devils because they denounced God. Like, God, why are you doing this to me? There can't be a God. Why, you know, you're making, I've got cancer, basically, whatever. There can't be a God. All my family all died. Oh, my God, there can't be a God. How would they let this happen? And that would be called denouncing God. So they would actually put them to death and call them Satan or witches or whatever it may be. But it's a fine line because your immunity system goes down when you are sick and also when you're very much into drugs or alcohol. So basically it's a fine line. Are you really hallucinating this, or because you're so down and out, it's an open invitation for the devil to take you. So it's a very catch-22, really. Because, oh, he saw that because he's delusional, or he saw that because he truly is so sick that it's an easy target for the devil to take over. That's why children are very vulnerable, because they aren't very strong. And they can be taken over very shortly, and they don't put up much, you know, they don't have all that, you know, they're very vulnerable at that age 12 to age 14. Most of the possessions happen at 12 to 14. And one of the things that really blew me away in our research, and this is very scary, is that none of these, say, out of 10 kids we interviewed, none of them knew each other. And we're just sitting there interviewing them like you're interviewing me, and we're asking them questions, you know, oh, we listen to Marilyn Manson and all that. Well, I don't think that's why you're possessed, but, you know, they're just going on and on and on. They're cutting themselves, they're ripping the flesh off their arms, they're doing all kinds of stuff, you know, they're bleeding themselves, they're cutting, they're doing everything, and all of them are doing it. But there's one thing that truly indented into that interview is that every one of them said that they heard the sound of marching feet, the sound of drums, the sound of an army, and a trumpet.
Yes, that's. I remember reading that in a. I'm sorry, the Amityville Horror. That's what George Lutz was hearing quite a bit.
I know, and what's really scary is that that was when we were filming The Possessed. All these kids said that, and went, this is crazy. They're all saying this stuff. And then when we did The Haunted Boy and we got a copy of The Real Diary of the Exorcist, it said in the 26th. Pages, on one of the pages, it said that the boy, it wasn't a girl that was possessed in the Exorcist, it actually really was a boy. Mm-hmm. He said that he had heard the sound of an army marching, drums, with the sound of a bugle, a trumpet.
No, that's
probably. Oh my God. Oh my God. And then, of course, possession, exorcism, is a military term. And also, legion. Is a military term, legion being I am many, which is basically the name of Satan. So very fascinating. All there, exorcism possession is a military term, the sound of marching armies.
Yeah, it definitely would seem that way. When you do read real demonology, you do see that there is a hierarchy of demonic entities leading all the way up to the big guy himself, not God, but Satan, leading all the way up to that, and it's almost as if they do operate as generals, admirals. They have these, you know, other hierarchies underneath them until you get down to the foot soldiers, and, you know, so, yeah, I could see how it'd be used very militarily.
Well, it's a war. It's a war. It's a war between good and evil. That's really all it's about. And everything is... In politics is a war, everything. In going into traffic is a war. It basically, it's built that way, and it's always a fight between good and bad. It just depends on what side or you're strong enough to stay with. And I just found that all that stuff, what makes our job very beautiful is when we come across stuff like that, we actually scratch our heads and you go, oh my God. Kind of like X-Files, where you figure the whole thing out, and you go like, this is real. And it's so scary because it is true.
Yeah. Well, it is amazing how some of those things can definitely change your life. Now, Christopher, I know you said that you could only give us an hour tonight.
I can stay a little longer if you'd like.
All right, fantastic. That's kind of what I was hoping for that you would say.
Yes.
Now, there's always been a lot of controversy, of course, going back to the whole idea of possession, of course, there being controversy. Now, one of the most controversial things that people have always talked about, they called him Robert Mannheim, or they called him many different, that he was just an incredibly precocious young boy, almost brat-like in a sense. But he was like that before this possession had taken place. Do you think that, you know, his bad behavior and being a child, and if he was so horrible, do you think that they could have opened up? Or was there something more that I know there was a thing with an aunt who I believe was a gypsy, or she was a Eastern European Rom. Is there any truth to that, you think?
Well, first of all, let me compliment you on your well-versed research.
Oh,
you're
thank
very
you.
Well-versed in what the questions that you're asking.
I was doing this before it was cool, my man.
Well, no, I love it because it makes it a pleasure to actually answer your questions. Because
oh, thank you.
These are the ones that I love to answer. It is a fascinating story, and when you read the real diary, you can just kind of sit down one-on-one and try to figure it out. That's why we got the diary. We got it as an investigation. We got it as to delve into. We got it off of a psychiatrist. I'm not sure if you saw The Haunted Boy, but there was a psychiatrist in there that had gotten the diary to basically, he was the chap that says whether somebody, you know, is insane or not insane to stand trial. And he had gotten that because he wanted to basically break that diary down to actually stand that boy in trial to see if he was possessed or not. So, yes, he was a precarious, and yes, he was a brat. There's also rumors that he was bisexual or gay. And back in 1949, you could imagine the politics behind that.
Sure.
I cannot believe how vulgar and how pornographic the diary says he is, because back in 1949, you didn't have, you know, the easy access to what could twist one's mind today, the internet, you know, basically the different avenues of media that you can actually kind of copycat. What was he copycatting from? See, that is an interesting question. What would he have copycatted from if it wasn't the devil himself?
Right.
The stuff he came up with was basically very twisted stuff that he was doing. Remember the movie The Exorcist? Most of it did happen, but it happened to a boy, a little boy.
I was going to ask that, because in the movie The Exorcist, I know, you know, they say that it's based on that. They did bring a lot of that across, the vulgarity and the, you know, saying some very sexual things. I mean, and I know even today that there are a lot of people that find homosexuality to be abhorrent, but back in the 40s, I'm surprised they didn't just place this kid into an asylum and just forget about him. Was there any chance of that actually happening to him?
Well, the reason he ended up in Election Brothers Hospital was they took him down to St. Louis because it's the only one that would accept him. Back then, no asylums would take him, and the hospital asylum that he actually went into was dealing with a lot of drug addicts. A lot of, at that time, opium was the drug of choice. A lot of violent drunks, schizophrenics, that kind of mental behavior. So they actually checked him into one of those hospitals, because they're the only ones who could do it. And he only ended up in that because he got too violent, because in the house we actually shot in was the house that he got most of the possession and half the exorcism done in. So he got so violent in that house, the neighbors started complaining. So they had to check him into a hospital. So the concept is there were just a lot of eyewitnesses and stories that went around that when he was checked in the hospital, they had said he had epilepsy, that he was catatonic again, basically all the same avenues that we've just talked about. But nobody could believe that when they were walking down the hallway, he was levitating on the bed. And the guy had to say, no, that's definitely not epilepsy. You know, because how could somebody be floating, you know, 12 inches off the bed?
Right. Either that or they're using the force. One of the things that I really found interesting about the story is he was also very, very physically violent with people. I believe there was something that he grabbed a spring and cut his preacher's arm open.
Yeah,
is there any truth to that?
Yeah, he did that to Father Hughes, actually is an interesting concept, because Father Hughes is now I'm not saying anything. I'm just going to tell you what it says in the diary. See, I'm not putting my views into this because it's very controversial, but right. I have my own feelings of it. Everybody's entitled to their own. But Father Hughes took the boy home into his house and slept in his bed for about a month.
Okay.
Which is kind of strange in general.
Yeah, basically.
He needed to watch the little boy, so he had the little boy come to his house, and mm-hmm. at the same time, that boy had stayed in his bed for a month. In the diary, it says, if you molest me one more time, I'm going to cut your balls off.
Oh,
so,
see, that one I was not aware of.
That's the same chap that he did the spring with.
Okay.
So there's an interesting concept of a twist in the story. Now, that part of the diary is edited out in a lot of the versions that are out there. The one we have is the unedited version. And I found that very fascinating because basically the church blamed the aunt for basically getting involved into worshiping Satan through the Ouija board, as they put it.
Yeah.
At the same time, they also said that the aunt had molested the boy, but at the same time, we had spoken to a great-great-granddaughter of the family who said there's no way that the auntie could do it because she had multiple sclerosis and she couldn't even move.
Okay.
So this is how in-depth we got into it, you see. What I'm saying is we got so in-depth to really try to find out what really happened, to find out how much of the story was true and how much was fabricated. So right. I kind of left it up in the open for you to decide. I'm just going to give you the facts of what we found out.
See, and I think that's like the crux of the matter when it comes to psychical research, paranormal research, that you have so many versions of the same story, it's kind of no wonder that you have skeptics that are like, yeah, see, I told you that wasn't true. And it's like, no, it's just everybody has a little bit more of an insider look on what was going on. And I mean, if there was sexual misconduct that was going on with this young man, then, maybe the guy deserved it.
No doubt. I agree. Yeah. But there's no doubt. Physical abuse and sexual abuse puts you into a frame of mind that is almost like an alarm clock for the bad guy. It's the alarm.
Right.
It's the badness wakes up when something bad is going on. He goes, okay. Or even at that point, a weakness, they enforce it. I mean, it is the devil's or the darkness's job to destroy your life, and how better to destroy your life through molest, incest, murder, being a severe drug addict, you're forgetting your family and forgetting even drinking. You don't even like milkshakes anymore once you're involved into drugs. All you care about is drugs. You don't care because you can't see straight. And when that happens, it's almost like an invitation for the devil to continue destroying your life. Because there's a reason that you were put on this earth, and the reason you put on this earth is to do something good, not something bad. And the reason the devil gets involved is he wants to make sure what you're going to do good never sees the day, never sees the light ever, and you win.
That was probably one of the most beautiful and true things. Although, I mean, I'm not a Christian, but I think that that is definitely something that would speak to, the soul.
That's what
everybody.
William Bradshaw actually taught. I'm not I'm Church of England Anglican, but at the same time, I don't believe, this is my view, I don't believe everything that is written because it's a man-made thing. Religion is political.
Yes.
Spiritual is, you're born, you can worship anywhere, you can worship, go in your backyard right now and look at the sky and go ahead and pray. You don't need a church. But there's nothing wrong with a church, though, because it's a very good reminder. It's no different than having a Buddha in front of you every morning you wake up. You see Buddha's, the contentment of Buddha is what it's all about. And you go like, thank you for giving me that contentment I need to deal with the day. Same with Jesus. And you see looking at the cross and you see the despair and the humility he went through, your life doesn't seem as bad anymore. That's the whole concept of the icons of it. So the whole thing of realizing what good and bad is really under the degree of how you're going to handle it. And William Bradshaw helped me really understand that because, how was the boy possessed? And I said, well, it says he was possessed by a Ouija board. He goes, I don't believe in that. No way. And I go, then how was he possessed? And he says he was possessed through alcohol and doing drugs and, you know, doing bad things. And he goes like, well, and smoking. And I'm going, oh, well, then I'm going to go out and get possessed right now because I smoke. And he goes, no, you don't understand. And I go, well, then please tell me. And he goes, well, I don't want to repeat myself, but basically God and the devil knows the same thing. You know the Bible drill. I don't need to go there. Okay? Mm-hmm. The right-hand man, devil's right-hand man of Jesus to God, I mean, and then he was kicked out. He did his own thing. So he knew that you were good or bad. So all along the way, he's going to do everything to destroy your life from reaching your ultimate goal, which is to help humanity. So basically, he's going to get you hooked on cigarettes. He's going to get you hooked on alcohol. Then one thing leads to another. You get hooked on drugs. Then you start doing things like stealing. Could lead to murder. Could lead to sexual misconduct, which in the worst kind of molest and yeah. pedophile and all that stuff that happens. And then what has he just done? He has destroyed your life, and you have not reached your goal to make what you were supposed to do. Like, basically, smoking can create cancer, so he's destroyed you so you don't enjoy your children anymore.
Yeah, because your life free 3 years.
Cut short. Your life is cut short. And I said after that, I said, wow, I can see where you're coming from. I can see what you mean in that.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful enlightenment for me to realize that everything you do should be thought about before you do it.
Right. I think that's a beautiful thing to even end on. You know, Christopher St. Booth, it's been my dream to actually have a chat with you or your brother or both of you at the same time for a few years now. I really respect your work. I think it's great. And are there any websites or, you know, projects before we end this that you want to make people aware of?
Well, you can go, if you want to know what we're doing, you can go to www.spooktv.com. And everything, all our shows are on there. We have a lot of good DVD specials going on there right now at the moment. Mm-hmm. And this coming up on January 18th and 19th, we're doing a show at this Sadamazil Rectory, which is in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And basically, we're doing a paranormal investigation, but we're asking you to dress up early 1900s. So basically, you know, about the turn of the century, 1875 to 1900, because we want to bring the realism back into the place. So we basically actually are dressing a period for the investigations. We just did one, and it was highly successful at the Twin City Opera House. And that was so fabulous to see all those people dressed up in late 18th century clothing, that it put such a beautiful energy in the air that it made the investigation so much more successful and rewarding. So we're doing that at the Central Rectory on January 18th and 19th. And then on February 16th, I've got a cue card here, okay? So bear with
me. No problem.
With the Para Roast birthday bash for the Booth Brothers and Keith Hayes. So it's our birthday. It's Keith's birthday, and it's our birthday, Philip and I's birthday. And we decided we would do something fun, so we made it into a Para Roast. So basically people, a lot of Para celebrities are coming down to Roasters. And
that
will be at Louisville, Kentucky, at the Ramada Plaza, Bluegrass Parksville, in Louisville, Kentucky, and that's on February 16th. And those are the things we're doing, and we're also working right now on doing a brand new motion picture. It basically is Death Tunnel 2 for NBC right now, and that's supposed
Fantastic.
To be the Halloween movie of 2013.
Great. I think that sounds fantastic. So, you know, again, Christopher, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's been a real honor and a real pleasure to speak with somebody I like to tell people this, that it's like, I love talking to people who get it. And you, sir, obviously get it. So.
Well, I mean, I've been involved, you know, we've been watching a lot of what's been going on in the paranormal field, and obviously, you know, the drama that's been happening for the last, I think it's been 6 weeks or 8 weeks or whatever it's been going on mostly, mm-hmm. and the silliness that's been going on, and it still is going on. He's not even up as of yesterday. And I just we've just disconnected ourselves with all that stuff because it's absolutely ludicrous, just what's going on. And it's just all about attention. It's all about it. Somebody wants attention. And really, if you're really truly in the spiritual paranormal world, you can't be touched by that. Because if you're at peace, especially being involved in the paranormal, you have to have spirituality. And if you're in touch with yourself, it cannot affect you.
Yeah.
And that you must stay in that mode. I mean, it's hard sometimes, trust me.
Oh, no, I know that.
You've got to practice that.
Yeah, I talked to our mutual friend Jenny Gurney quite a bit, and she's a nice girl. I love talking to her. Sometimes when I'm up late when I'm at work, she's up late, and we'll just Facebook back and forth with each other. But she has told me, and so has Chris Davis, that the Post Town School most definitely is haunted. I have heard people that have had some very intense episodes there with the spirits. And I can't help but feel like it's like these two people, they have far more credibility with me than somebody who just puts a bunch of garbage out there on the internet. And let's face it, 95% of the stuff that's on the internet and even in Facebook alone is just garbage.
It is, but I mean, it's just like AOL. They spend more time saying who got murdered and what they. I mean, listen to what their captions read. You won't believe what happened to this child. Click here.
Yeah.
That's how they try to get you to view. They don't say, they don't say, like, little boy. There's been a few things which has been great. Little boy saves life of this, and that's beautiful. They need, yeah. People need to be pushed more into positivity. And once you get locked onto that feeling of love and compassion, these little peon, and they're no different than the concept of the devil, these little peon people that demand, the devil truly was a narcissist. He is the ultimate ultimate centerfold of what narcissism really is. Look at me, and if you're not looking at me, I'm going to do something, so you do look at me. And if you constantly do not keep looking, don't mention their name, do not mention their name, and they're going to burn out because they cannot live without your energy. The whole situation about Post Town has gone the wrong direction. He might have started thinking what he was doing was the correct way, but the way he handled it was so disgusting. If anybody has a situation of against anybody, they can do it like gentlemen. It was because the way it was done, it was not done in a very respectful manner. It proved to be unrespectful at the end result.
Yeah.
And that what had happened. It was not done. If I had a beef with you, I would just sit down with you with either a beer and a cup of tea and say, hey, we've got to figure this out. You know, what's going on? And the fact at that point, if you couldn't do disagreement, then it just comes to, proof. And if there's no proof, let it go. But the fact is, no. I want my pony and I want it now. I want my pony and I want it now. I want my pony, yeah. Goddamn it. I want my pony. And they won't give up. They won't give up. They won't give up to the point it goes like, whatever. And it's like, that's where it's at right now. It's a big whatever. And the people from Post Town are beautiful people. I know them very personally. And they're really nice people. When I met them, I looked in their eyes and I could tell that they were really good people.
No, I have no doubt about that, especially, with speaking with, our mutual friend Jenny and Chris as well. And they're very nice people. They're great people. I like being associated with them, and I can't wait to meet them in June when we do the Quad Cities Paranormal, Quad Cities Paracon in Iowa. So I'm really looking forward to that. But sometimes, unfortunately, I do think that it is the nature of some people to, pardon my French, start some shit for no reason whatsoever.
It's balance, though. It's all about, it's always been about balance. You cannot, we're in the deep sense of winter. It's very cold, but the sun will shine again. It's about hot and cold. It's about fire and water. It's about ocean and desert. You're going to get that. And the more you spiritually awaken and the more you get into ascension, the more darkness is going to cloud the sun. So expect it. Every day you have a good day, expect somebody trying to piss on your parade.
Right. And not only that, too, with the paranormal research and investigation and whatever, you're not dealing with absolutes. You're dealing with a highly, highly subjective subject matter. I don't care how objective you claim to be. What it really boils down to, What do you believe?
Yeah, but what somebody believes is somebody what else somebody doesn't believe. So basically, yeah. Without a respect, let them believe. As long as they're not hurting anybody, let them believe what they want to. They right. want to believe in Allah, God, even Buddha, which is not a religion in general.
Yeah.
You know, Buddha is a way of life. It's mm-hmm. a positive approach, as much as Jesus is. You know, whether you believe in it or not, it doesn't matter as long as it's not hurting anybody. If it starts to hurt somebody, that's where it needs to be, you know, the next degree needs to be taken care of. But you should not judge, or you will be judged.
Well, I think that's you know, that's cause and effect. That's, you know, that's prana, that's karma, that's samsara, that's, you know, whatever your religious or belief or your belief system is. That is the most basic and fundamental fact of the universe. What you put out there, you're going to get back. If you put negativity out there, guess what? Get ready. It's the law of attraction.
Yes, it is. It is. Exactly. You go ahead and dwell. It's no difference like, you know, when a drug addict's sitting behind closed blinds going, the cops are out there, the cops are out there. His energy eventually creates a substance that basically the cops end up coming there. Because you have to be careful what you believe or you dream of, because it actually ends up being, yeah, you put out the like method, it's going to come and knock at your door. Put out positivity, the only thing that can come back to you is positivity. There'll be I'm sure there's going to be darkness along the way, but mm-hmm. I mean, it shows you how strong you really are. And then the more stronger you hold out, the more you reap the rewards of goodness at the end. You must correct. Really believe that. You really have to believe and just basically, I mean, you can't even feel sorry, because even feeling sorry for somebody really is not in the realm of compassion. Compassion is where you don't feel sorry. You just don't judge, and you just try to make them feel better. But there is a point where you need to get away from anybody that is negative and walk out of that door.
Yeah, I think too, that also compassion is being sorry in action. That's actually...
It is. No, that's beautifully said. That's correct.
Oh, okay.
That's exactly what it is. Action is the thought. Compassion is the action of thought. Yes.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's I think that's something that everybody should really take a look at. And if you're doing something that's bad, I mean, really, there's nothing wrong with stepping back from yourself, taking a look at your life, and being like, I need to seriously pick apart what it is that I'm doing, so I can put it back together again. And I think that's where, you know, emotional maturity comes in. You talk to any psychologist or psychiatrist, and they're going to tell you that it's like they do. They may not call it the spirit, but they do believe in the spirit. They do believe in the soul, and that's why a lot of them will say you need to step back from yourself every now and then and take a look at yourself, because you're being your own doctor of your soul. They can't change you. I can't change you. I can't make you a better person. That has to come from you.
You need to get up out of the room when you're depressed, and you need to. Only one person can do it. You need to step back up on your feet and walk out, saying, "I am sick of my life. And I can change it."
Yeah.
That's what you need to do. You need to do it yourself. And, of course, it's really beautiful to have support by your families and by your friends. But at the end, you must do it yourself. And you must choose the people that you hang with. They're not premeditating into bad actions. Because sometimes bad happens and there's nothing you can do about it. But as long as it's not premeditated, then, you know, there's a chance that you can definitely move on, because everybody's, you know, done stuff that they're not. Which is what I hate is going on right now, is people have done something maybe in the past that is not cool, but they basically were lost, but now they're found. But there mm-hmm. are these people that are bringing it up.
I'm
reminding them that you were a bad person back then. You're a bad person, so you're never, ever going to be any better. So basically, you're saying that this person never gets a second chance. And then, you know what? If you really believe in Christianity and Jesus, that is definitely the first bad thing you can do, because Jesus, basically, in the whole concept of the universe, forgives.
Right.
So you have a second chance. And you have a good, you know, God, I did, that was terrible. I'm never going to do that again.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I hate about what's going on right now, is people are just finding anything to make sure that this stuff happens to people bad, and they'll do anything to just draw out of the weakness. They're going to push, you know, salt into the wound or whatever it is. And I'm just seeing a lot of, terrible deception. But it's again, if you truly are in touch with spirituality, in touch with yourself, nothing can hurt you. You do not have to defend something that you haven't done.
Correct. That is beautifully said. And it's like I said at the top of the show. It's like this stuff is it's not healthy for people. You know, it's making people look bad. I understand the fact that, and I've been in this field long enough to know that there are people that are going to fake things, and they continuously do it. But when you step back from yourself and you're like, you know, I think I'm going to stop faking photographs or stop faking voice recordings, and I really want to try and do what's right, because I really am interested in this field, you're going to have a lot of people that are going to be like, we don't trust you.
Yes, I'm afraid that's going to happen, yes.
Yeah. So, all right. The thing is,
first of all, it's not good to deceive anybody. It's not good to the concept of the word fraud, but I mean, fraud is a broad term, you know. Also, you know, like, there's so many haunted houses out there that do a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and you just really need to be going in there knowing that. I take everything with a grain of salt. I mean, when you're buying a car, not everything's going to work on a used car. So you're just going to take the best you can. But that doesn't mean you don't drive. That doesn't mean you don't buy a car. You just have to be, get yourself, go. That's what paranormal teaching came up. Get yourself more educated on the whole concept of things. So when you go in there, you're going to go like, oh, that was silly. That wasn't true. Ha ha ha. But I'm glad that I know that myself. You don't need somebody, though, that truly is dictating it. That is a bad thing. We don't need any more dictators in this world. We have enough. Indeed, we do.
That's, you know, and that's funny too that you should bring that up. Is this okay? You have, yeah, we run till 10 o'clock my time. Are you okay with sticking around for a little bit longer, or?
Yeah, I'm actually having a good cigar and a coffee, because actually Philip had been finishing the script and I have to go through the editing. We have a meeting tomorrow.
Okay.
So this is a good break for me, so I'll stay for a little longer. Gets me, you know, especially talking about spirituality, because I think, you know, we're talking a lot about spirituality, and I really think that's important, because if you can really truly, recently, I have been so high on life, more than ever, just thinking about beautifulness of flowers and children and just how great things are, despite what's going on in the economy, despite what's going on in world war and politics and everything, because, you know, the end of the world, December 21st, never came, and everybody was the first to kind of hypocrite. Basically, what they did is they went, oh, it didn't happen. Oh, my God, they were wrong. The Mayans were stupid. They all went and did that. But that's not the truth, because the point is, first of all, it was the end of the world as we know. It was the end of the calendar. It was the start of something fresh. There was a lot of people that didn't make it through that week. You know, there was was it in Iowa that 25 people died in a very serious weather condition highway accident?
Yeah.
So, I mean, a lot of people didn't make it into the new world, which is on December 22nd. And also, life as we know it, by the way, December 2012, check this out, 2012 was the world, or up to that world, as we knew it.
Mm-hmm.
In 2013, basically starting December 22nd, was the lead into 2013.
Mm-hmm.
How many relationships were lost? How many people changed their partner, changed their job, became broke, lost a lot of stuff they had, and now had to actually become a lot more, you know, basically poorer and deal with that? It was basically getting you ready for a better life, appreciating what you had. That is the end of the world as we knew it. So many relationships broke up to that time. That can be, when you put the word world out, you know, when you say, well, you know, my world's over because I just broke up with my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
My world's over. That's what we're talking about, the end of the world. to the Mayans, it was the end of their calendar, and the next measure and movement was basically happening on December 22nd.
Yeah.
Measure and life move.
Right. No, I can definitely see that. One of the things that really kind of irked me the next day, and of course, you know, December 22nd was probably the most annoying day in Facebook's history, but people saying that the Mayans are stupid. First off, you're dealing with an incredibly advanced society of people. They knew a lot more about astronomy and mathematics than you could ever possibly know, my friend. There was nothing stupid about them. We just did not properly do our homework. That whole artifact that they've been showing in television shows and books and magazines and media and the internet for the last few years now, that, you know, it's supposedly the calendar, the Mayan calendar. And I have a real fascination with Mesoamerican art as well as culture and society. That's not even Mayan. That's Aztec.
Yes. The thing is, I did a lot of research and a lot of studying on the whole concept of why, you know, what was going to go down on December 22nd. NASA was saying there's no planetary alignment. The Mayans, mm-hmm. a lot of the elders did believe there were planetary alignments. Of course, and there was the people saying, well, you know, leap year was not even involved and all that, so there were very many days off or even a year off to the concept of it. But the whole thing that what it really did was it put a wake-up call to us, and if anything you want to get out of it, maybe the world was ending, but maybe the universe decided that we were worth saving and gave us another chance.
It's quite possible. I mean, I do believe that there is so much more to being human than just being warlike. I do believe that humans, that we as people, a society, a species, that we are capable of incredible acts of compassion and kindness towards our fellow man. Unfortunately, though, we don't see that because American news wants to scare the hell out of us every night rather than try to uplift us and show us something that's positive. It's funny because when you're actually, you know, in the media part of it, it's like, what they do is that they do like a horror story sandwich. In the middle, they put like a good story, and it maybe lasts 30 seconds. But the bread that brings everything together is all the terrible story, the shootings here, and the bus crashes there, and the tsunamis here, and the earthquakes there. It's like they can't get through all of that without we're going to scare you because, well, that's ratings. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, well, I mean, you got to figure, though, the human psyche is default is negative. It's much easier to wake up in a bad mood than a good mood. It takes a lot to get you in a bad mood, and it's really easy to get you in a good mood. It's really easy to wake up in a bad mood. So negativity sells newspapers, darkness, drama, you know, what's happening with the Kardashians today? Oh my God, what's happening with Snooki? You know,
I could care less.
But yeah, exactly. What's doing with you know, some more public beatings and this person did this to this person. And basically, that's how all the Facebook stuff is going. All these people now are putting up these silly para fraud poser stupid stuff like that because they want to be, you know, it's like if you can't make films, what do? You become a reviewer. You become a reviewer of films.
You become a critic.
Because you're not talented enough to make them, so I'm going to review them.
Right.
You know, it's like, well, first of all, everybody has their own review, so it's nice, I guess it's nice to listen to somebody's review, I suppose. But, you know, in the industry that we work in, don't believe your good reviews because you'll have to believe your bad ones.
Well,
you know,
see,
I'm seeing a lot of good out there. I'm seeing a lot of people. If anything that this power drama has done for everybody, it's made us all a lot closer. And it's actually weeded out a lot of people that should not be in this field.
I agree. And then that's kind of what the wild thing about it was. Like I was saying at the top of the show, I remember when there was, and even Keith Age will tell you this, because I know that he's been a lifetime in this as well. I remember a day when there was maybe a few dozen of us running around doing our thing. When I was 17, 18 years old, when I first started investigating, I honestly thought I was the only person doing this that didn't have a PhD attached to their name. And there was a time where you could do your thing, and then you know you were actually doing real help with people. When I went on my first investigation, it was a pad of paper, a pen, and my brain. That's all I had. And we don't have that now, thanks to the internet and thanks to, you know, a good part of the television shows. All of a sudden, this seems, even with, you know, shows like American Idol, it's reality television in of itself. It seems to bring out the bad in people because I want to be better than this person, and I want to do what this person's not doing, and I want to show the better evidence, and I want to debunk this and debunk that. I'm sorry for using that word. Everybody knows how much I hate it, but that just seems to be such a problem in general, and that's like a sickness in our society. I think that you would agree with that, correct?
It is, but I mean, that's all wars are a cause of jealousy, pride, and ego.
Sure. So
everything is a result of you know, I don't have what you have. I'm jealous of you. You said that to me. How dare you? Well, I'll show you. You did that to me? Oh, my God. Well, you know, I'm standing by my name. You're never going to do that to me. And then that person says, well, you're not going to do that to me. And there goes the pride. There goes the ego and the jealousy. Well, you know, you have bigger guns than I. Whatever. And this is what the whole situation is. You must drop your ego and pride and jealousy and look at it at that point fresh. And then you can see how stupid it really is. Because somebody's sitting there calling you every kind of name in the world. Trust me, there were times that I wanted to put my Buddha beads down and pick up my cane, okay, and go. You know, and even Dalai Lama said that there's a time to put your beads down. Because right. You have to. But I mean, if you know what had happened to the Tibetans and what the Chinese had done to them, the Red Chinese, and other forces over there, was absolutely so tragic what they did to them. And
yeah.
Then they still had to keep the concept, I love you, may peace be with you.
Mm-hmm.
And they which drove them crazy because nothing they could do could break their inner spirit. And that's
right.
What we're telling you. We're not there in the paranormal world. We're not there to break spirits. We're there to help find them.
Yeah,
we're not there to break them, and this is what's going on with what's going on. The paranormal drama is there are people literally out there trying to break people's spirits now.
And what is it that they have to gain by all of it?
Attention.
Yeah,
like any bully needs to be. Like
yeah.
Any good person, look at me, look at me, look at me.
Mm-hmm.
If everybody is listening right now, and all the paranormal people that caused the drama, if they truly did not get buy into and did not write back and just say block them or delete them immediately. Like, we don't get very many attacks, but if we
mm-hmm.
do, I just delete them and block them immediately.
Yeah.
I don't even give them a second chance to write something, and I don't write back, oh yeah? You know, you know, that's my ego
that just
and pride talking. Oh yeah.
Yeah?
I mean, trust me, I kind of would love to do that. You know, but, you know, you're just good. It's like fighting with a child or fighting with somebody that's drunk.
Right.
It's just really, you're not going to really end up winning. It's just going to be a mess, and you just want to walk out of it. So the minute somebody walks in and causes some negativity, walk.
Right.
Just walk out that door, or on Facebook, delete them and block them immediately, and do not let it ruin your day, because something like that would, you know, basically a negative energy could cause your day to be ruined, your week to be ruined. God damn it, well, you know, that happened to me. Well, now you start arguing with somebody else and you get in a car accident, and then this happens because it's a chain of effects of negativity that happens. Try that doing that positive. It'd be nice to get a chain of events happening in the positive side.
Right. No, I couldn't believe more. You know, before we started the show, Cheryl and I, we were talking about, you know, feedback to the show and to the magazine. I also write for ParanormalUnderground.net as well. Whenever Cheryl decides to put my articles in, she gets to keep the talent happy here. But no, I told her, I'm like, not only do I want to hear you know, the good, what people have to say. I love getting emails from people from, like, as far away as Australia. I had a doctor actually email me asking me my opinion on what kind of books that he should read because he wants to do this. He wants to investigate ghosts. I mean, here's a medical doctor doing this. But I also want to hear about people who are like, you know, Rick, I want to just, I hate you. Because I think that even with that negative criticism, you can still actually maybe learn a little bit about it. I mean, I have a tendency to talk over people, and I've had people tell me that not only during the show, and but I also have my family telling me that as well. I just think that as a communicator, we need to have that we need to have that criticism as well as the kudos, because how do we grow as communicators? How do I make this show, how do Karen and I make this show grow if we don't have people telling us the bad as well? But you can't get caught up in that bad, and I think that that's where the difference is.
Well, I agree. You just can't buy into it. And basically, if you're going to listen to a good compliment, you're going to have to listen to some bad. I mean, it's like, say you're voted for an award for doing this. You can't complain if somebody votes you for a bad award, you know, like whatever it may be. Because mm-hmm. if you can just go ahead and look at it and laugh and don't take life so serious for a start. That's what is really blowing me away is what's going on in the paranormal is that they're taking everything so serious in the section of trying to just make it. You start with calling somebody this and moving on to eight different things and forgetting what you even are after at the beginning. And it's like it's absolutely truly the work of some deranged situation that's going on. And I don't want any part of it. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to read about it. I just delete it, block it, and move on. I won't let any negativity into my life. You have anybody has beautiful children, a beautiful family, and have a beautiful future ahead. You do not want to waste your energy going in that direction, and don't even give that. Just no different than calling a demon's name. Do not show any attention to those bullies. Do not show any attention to anybody that's doing it. I mean, there is a fine line. I understand that, trust me. And that line does get crossed. You have to find a way that you can deal with it, but also do it without looking like them that's doing it to you.
Yeah.
You know, there has to be a way to do it. I mean, I think that an eye for an eye does work at some points in time. But, I mean, how serious are the charges here? How serious is the situation? I'm just seeing a lot of people that's very jealous and a lot of bullying going on and a lot of... you're doing better than me, so I'm going to ruin your life.
Right, and that's the thing too, is like with the proving thing, I'm to the point now where I don't feel I need to prove anything to anybody, and that's why I don't debate skeptics or cynics or anything of that nature, because it's not my job to prove anything to you. My job is to help people that feel that they have a real problem. I don't care about posting my pictures so you can see them.
Well, I know. It's like, if you want to debunk, well, why don't you go ahead and debunk God? Or why don't you go ahead and debunk Jesus?
Yeah.
Because you can't see them. But a lot of people believe they're real.
Well, you can't see oxygen. Go ahead and debunk oxygen. You breathe it every day, dude.
Exactly. And so that's what I'm saying. The whole concept of saying that somebody's wrong and somebody's right is not valid here. It's
right.
About belief.
Right.
I believe it, so it's real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it doesn't mean the other person, you know, well, I don't see it, so it's not real. No, I mean, I believe in what I believe, you believe what I believe. There's no reason to go to war about it.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely, and there's no reason to, just because you go to a building and you don't experience some of the very intense experiences that people have had, just because you didn't experience doesn't mean that it's not there. It just means that it didn't decide to mess with you today, or you're just not the kind of person that it wants to deal with.
Exactly. I'm telling you, the people that are saying this, if I was a ghost, I wouldn't come out and dance for them.
No.
that would bother even opening my eyes and getting out of bed for them. I would definitely entertain somebody I look forward to talking to. I don't talk to people that are ignorant.
Right, and that's the thing too, is you can't go into a place and expect the spirit to come out and, you know, do monkey sideshow, JoJo the idiot monkey kind of games for you. You can't expect that, because I know that if I'm like, you know, in a place where I've decided to stay, and somebody comes into my home and like, hey, you're going to do what I say and you're going to leave now. No, this is my space and I am not going to entertain your ignorance for one iota. And I could see how a true haunting or an intelligent spirit could do that. It's like, dude, get away from me. I don't even want to deal with you.
I know. You see, but you know what I'm saying? Everybody has an opinion. I mean, one of my favorite stories is, and it's actually it's a beautiful story, is when the traveler visits the Buddhist monk. He goes over to Tibet and he visits the Buddhist monk, and the traveler walks in. He goes in, and the monk has no furniture or no belongings at all. And the traveler says to him, he goes, hey, what's up with this? You don't have any belongings. You don't have any furniture. What's going on? And he goes, well, the Buddhist monk turns to the traveler, well, neither do you. And the traveler goes, of course I don't. I'm just visiting. And the Buddhist monk says, well, so am I.
Yeah, I love that story.
I love that story. It really makes a lot of sense. And it's just basically people are just always there are certain people that just always want to ruin your day. And it's just really, I really believe if we could teach this in school, meditation in school, even if it was just for 5 minutes a day, we would have so much less problems with the children and suicide and getting involved with the wrong things. Because once you get in touch with yourself and believe in yourself and get in touch with love and compassion, a lot of these things you could not even entertain doing.
Right.
That's very important to do.
No, I would love to do Zen meditation where I work, but that turns into like a separation of church and state kind of a problem. But, you know, we're coming up near the end of the show here. And, you know what, Christopher, I just need to say I love when we have these shows where we have somebody on who has very little ego. It feels very uplifting speaking to a gentleman of like yourself. And, you know, I just want to say thank you so much for sticking around, because I know you said to me on Facebook that I can only give you an hour, but you gave us so much more.
Well, and I don't want people to get bored. So.
I'm the same way, but no, thank you very much. You know, before we cut out again, if you just want to, you know, talk about what website was that again that you wanted people to go to?
Spook TV. If you guys, we have the Spooked, The Possessed, Haunted Boy, Children of the Grave, Children of the Grave 2, The Unseen, and Soulcatcher, which is a beautiful story about the Native American hauntings. Beautiful. That's a beautiful show. They're all available at SpookTV.com, and there's a lot of specials going on there. So if they're uncut. They're all the DVDs uncut. And of course, if you want to see us live with Sabbathville on January 18th and 19th, which is going to be great, because, like, again, I can't tell you, when we did the Twin City Opera House, oh my God, when we looked out at all the beautiful audience dressed up in the late 18th century, early 1900s, I felt like I went back in time.
Yeah,
I
can admit.
It was so, like Sherlock Holmes ghost hunting style. It was so cool. It was so done classy and proper, and everybody left feeling great, and it was all very, very, everybody was quiet, there was no obnoxious, it was all professional. The most amateurs I've ever met was professional about it, because they felt the really good vibe of what we were all there trying to do, which was have a very serious investigation and really do some good PR for an attack that's been happening quite well, that's making paranormal a very bad word.
Yeah.
So we were very proud of doing that. So anyway, we have a lot of events coming up this year. So you just follow us on Facebook, Christopher St. Booth on Facebook, or Philip Adrian Booth on Facebook, or Keith Age on Facebook. And just keep, you know, what we're doing. And our shows are on Chiller and Sci-Fi. So just keep checking your schedules. And I don't know when they play them. They don't really tell us. They just pop up when they're playing. So we kind of just have to keep tracking on what they're doing. And then we also look forward to finishing our new film for NBC for 2013, Halloween.
Fantastic.
So that's going to be a creepy, creepy cool movie. The script that we just finished is really cool.
Outstanding. Well, Christopher, I just want to say thank you so much again, and I really hope that we can have you back on. And I'd really like to if we could have not only yourself, but your brother, and maybe even, you know, Keith Ajohn. I always thought he was a really cool guy.
He is. He is. he's a lot of fun. He is. Yeah. He's probably one of the most down-to-earth people, and he keeps us grounded as far as it comes down to getting. I mean, we're very spiritual, and Keith is very more, you know, what's the word? It was a cuteness thing. It's like, you know, your profile, you would go like, he goes, you're always about love and light. Chris and Phil, always about love and light. So it says, Christopher St. Bruce, Phil St. Bruce, love and light. But under Keith's age, it says guns and ammo. Because it's like fantastic. it takes the tough and the soft to create the perfect medium, you know? And that's what it's all about. You can't have hot water cold. A little bit of lukewarm is good. So there you go.
Well, that's kind of like my wife and I. She's when you deal with us, I'm the nice one. So, but she's still a, you know, love of my life. But again, Christopher, thank you so much for joining us, and I hope that we could have you back again. And like I said, it's been 2 hours that went by quickly, but I feel that I learned quite a bit. And just thank you very much for that.
Well, thank you for also doing your homework. And for everybody out there, it's really good to do your homework, because there's nothing better than really knowing the backbone of the stories you're talking about, and also the locations you're investigating and the people that you're trying to help. It really helps to know a lot of their background. And I just wanted to say it's a new year, and it's up to everybody to wake up tomorrow being positive and negative, and I would really push the fact of just make sure you're in a good mood. Just keep that positivity. And like I said, the law of attraction is everything. Just be positive when you wake up tomorrow, and your day will be beautiful.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much, Chris. So, Cheryl, what do we have coming up next week?
Hey, Rick. I just want to say thank you to Christopher for coming on tonight and talking to you. It was a great discussion.
Thank you.
And I'm looking forward to talking to Chris again in the future. Hopefully, he'll come back. next week we have a show on January 10th, and we are having a friend of the show back on. She is Rob Marie. She is a spiritual medium.
She's the most frequent flyer person on this show. I mean, she's even more so than Jeff Gronow.
Yeah. We've talked to Rob Marie several times, and she just always has such cool things to talk about. And I really like hearing you guys interview Rob Marie. I think I've had a chance to talk to her as well. But I can't wait to have her back on next week, January 10th. Mm-hmm. And then I just want to say real quick, January 17th, we are having another interview with a guest we had on. Ooh, was it November or December? I think it might have been November. But we only got to talk to her for about 45 minutes or so, and we had so many more questions, so she agreed to come back. And that guest is Kristen Ann, and she wrote the book Exploring Sacred Space, A Vast Quest.
Just the name alone is almost gives me like the chills of In a Galaxy Far Away.
You might not be too far off there with the content of the book as far as talking about, you know, what's coming up next for the human race. So interesting stuff. I still have a list of questions that you didn't get to last time because we ran out of time, but it should be interesting.
Yeah, there's just some guests, like for example with Christopher tonight, it's like you just don't feel that you have enough time.
Right, you get to the end of this show and you're disappointed because it's over. It seems like it's just been a few minutes and it's been a couple hours. So
right, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
More thing real quick. I'm sorry to cut you off. I just wanted to make an announcement. It's kind of a big announcement for us at Paranormal Underground. We are debuting a new site tomorrow, and if you go to paranormalunderground.net, so tomorrow's date is January 4th, 2013. And if you go to the site tomorrow, you will see a brand new, more reader-friendly website. It's also mobile-friendly. So if you use mobile devices, you can actually get the website on there, and it's very easy to read and that kind of thing. So if people want to go and check out the new site, I'd love them to join in on the forum discussion and write a blog or two if they want to, you know, get their opinion out on stuff. And of course we have the magazine. We have kind of a new magazine model, so people will go, I really hope that they go and check it out, and they can access a PDF for, I think it's, we set it at $1.99, and get a full PDF download of the current issues starting from January 13th and on. And I think we have the archive up also for the past issues. But the new issues are filled to the brim with good content. And we have, I don't know how many new columns in each issue now. I think maybe 8 or 8 to 10. So we have a lot of new content, new writers joining us. So it's really exciting. I hope people like it. And we're open to feedback, of course.
Right. So. And there's one of our newer writers that I want to give some recognition to, because she really did facilitate this great interview, or not even want to say interview, a talk that we had with Christopher St. Booth tonight. So Jenny Gurney, from myself and on behalf of Paranormal on the Ground, thank you so much for facilitating this.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, Jenny.
So coming up next on Z-Talk Radio is going to be Fox City's Paranormal with Tim and Amy. And it's a really good show. They're good people. They really know what the hell they're talking about. So, thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Christopher St. Booth, for being a guest and for sticking around more than an hour. And
that was cool.
That was cool. So, everybody, have a good night. Have a good week. And when we come back next week, we'll be talking to Rob and Maria, our most frequent flyer. So have a good night, everyone.
Night, everyone.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.